Okay, gute Woche. We've been discussing Avraham Avinu for the last few weeks. So, the next of our great Avos was Yitzchak. Yitzchak is a little more challenging to discuss because we don't know much about him. You learn in the Parshiyos, it's almost like, well, we know that he was the object of the Akedah. What we're told about him is more technical, and there's less essential information about who he was, his personality, his accomplishments. So I just want what we'll do is go in a broader kind of way. What does Sfarim explain that Yitzchak was? It's very famous. Yitzchak was the Midah of Gevurah. Avraham was the Midah of Chesed. These are famous concepts. Yitzchak was the Midah of Gevurah, meaning Yitzchak was adding a dimension to Avraham Avinu's, we'll use the word discovery, what he introduced to the world. And based on what we've been learning about Avraham Avinu, it pretty much looks like it was everything. But we'll discuss the dimension that the Sfarim tell us that Yitzchak added toward the complete picture that the others formed. And that is the Midah of Gevurah, or another way it's expressed is the Midah of Pachad, whereas Avraham Avinu was the Midah of Ava, Yitzchak Avinu was the Midah of Yira.
Question. I know they're moving on, but one of the things I hoped you were going to cover was, last week, partially we have Avram arguing with Hashem, are you going to destroy stone if there's 50 people, if there's, down to 10 people? Like, so at some point, not today, but I really would like to discuss, like, does that set a precedent for us to argue with Hashem? To say, why is this all doing?
Very interesting question.
Question. Oh, whatever you want to say, questioning, okay? Question.
That's an interesting question. The question that's being asked is coming
Okay.
back to Avraham Avinu. If we're going to extend the sugya of Avraham Avinu, what is the understanding of the give and take between Avraham Avinu and Hashem regarding stone? Was he arguing? Was he pushing for something? Negotiating, what exactly was happening there? We have to ask. I'll compound the question. You know what? We'll give some time to this question. I'll compound the question a little bit more. What was motivating Avraham Avinu? Obviously, it was his Midah of Chesed, right? That's what it's another classic example of his Midah of Chesed. We have to ask the question. We talked about this. Where did the Midah of Chesed come from? It wasn't Avraham Avinu was just, oh, it wasn't that he was just a nice type. He probably was, but that's not the greatness of what we're studying. It's that he studied very intently Hashem's operations in this world and was emulating them. And that just punctuates the question that much more. If it was all about studying Hashem and emulating him, then where would there ever be room to, so to speak, stand and try to, I won't use the word work against, but to discuss with Hashem, just watch, observe, and integrate it into your picture. But we see that no, he actually took the initiative to, so to speak, let's use the word advocate. So this is a question that does deserve our time, and it's a tangent, but most of our shiurim are tangents. So that's fine. And let's touch on it. Let's take a step back. I don't think we discussed this these last couple of weeks. But let's ask a question that reflects Roman Hashkafa. Did you ever get a Roman Hashkafa shiur? Get one now, a very brief words from the Gemara. That the Roman governor asked Rabbi Akiva, his name was Turnus Rufus. He asked Rabbi Akiva, he said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, what do you folks have business helping out a poor person? Hashem decided this person should be poor. That's the will of Hashem. Why are you interfering? On the contrary, That should earn you this favor with Hashem. Kindness, this is a great hashkafa, very convenient hashkafa. Kindness, doing chesed for people, should earn you this favor with Hashem because you're working against his plan. You wanted this person to be sick, you wanted this person to be needy, you wanted this person to be in trouble. Why are you getting involved? On the contrary, this is probably what I'm adding, this is just to be humorous. Roman hashkafa would probably say, help it out, right? Make him a little poorer, beat him a little more. Right? But that was the question he asked. And basically, Rabbi Akiva's answer is that Hashem, and again, I'm paraphrasing and expanding, said this much more concisely. Hashem set it up such that these people have those needs in order to provide us with the opportunity of caring for those needs. In other words, you take a poor person who really desperately needs money. Are you really going to take over care for this person? Let's say you completely take him on financially. Are you really taking over the care for this person? Who's seeing to his digestive system? Who's going to take care of his respiratory system? Hashem is saying, I'm still taking care of 95%, but I left a little bit of a gap. Why? Because, and this is what Avraham Avinu understood when he integrated the mitzvah of chesed. If Hashem left a gap, the idea is that Hashem is saying, I'm leaving room for you. I'm leaving room for you to join me. It's part of the values that I want you to integrate this value. Yes, Avraham Avinu, by analyzing the entire world, came to realize that Hashem's foremost value is chesed. And that more than that, Hashem wants to see people, so to speak, joining him in this great enterprise. He wants the world to reflect him. We spoke about this, I believe, in the past, but he wants his people to reflect him. To be similar to Hashem, that someone looks at you and says, the spiritual sense, yeah? Wow, that person looks just like her father. Hashem is a picture of chesed, and that's what this person looks like. Resemble the father, and in the same family business with him. And this is why Hashem leaves us room to do chesed. Hashem says, whoever it is you're helping and taking care of, I'm doing 95% of the picture. The same goes for our family members. The same goes for our children. Hashem is saying, I'm making you junior partners, very junior partners in the care for these people who are shaykh to me. I think I've told you a few times. At one time, I met at a chasana, I met Bichil Yaakovson, a Rebbe of mine. I introduced him to my son. I told him, this is my Reuven. So he gave me this look and he said, he's yours? You are his. In other words, Hashem is saying, this is my child. This is my child. And I am giving you some room to be my representative toward this child. But not just that. I am giving you room to be a representative of me in general to the people around you. I have representatives scattered about throughout Earth, you can choose to be one of those representatives. You can choose to be a conduit of my care for the people around you. I'm leaving room, different places for you to come and say, here's where I'm going to partner with you, and I'm going to do mine here. It can be at all kinds of different levels. I always spoke about your child, where it's the epitome. But be a person who gets very involved with chesed, very involved with needy people. But it also doesn't have to mean that. It means in the day-to-day help and assistance, and even just in terms of if you walk around with a smile on your face, and for people to pass you by in the street is a pleasant experience, and you're giving a bit of an injection of warmth into their day, you are one of Hashem's tzinoiros. You're one of Hashem's conduits in this neighborhood. You are there. There is that care of His for these people, and you're there to actually convey it from Him to them. This is something to appreciate with every encounter you have. You can actually be a representative of Hashem, a conduit of Hashem, giving over of His care, of His warmth, of the good feeling to the people around you. And this is what Avraham Avinu understood. And therefore, he was very involved in chesed. He was very involved in caring for people, etc. Okay, how does that connect to our discussion at hand? How does that connect to Stoim? Because Avraham Avinu understood another very fundamental point. Very fundamental point. It's also relevant to our lives every day. There are different ways of helping people. There's giving them food. There's giving them money, there's giving them a good word, there's giving them warmth, and there's davening for them. That's another way of providing for a person. It's another way of impacting and affecting another person's life. It's not different than any other form of hishtadlus. If you understand that I might go around collecting for somebody, then why should I not go davening for them also? If we understand the concept of davening regarding ourselves, and also with regard to ourselves, it's something that demands explanation because it's a classic question. Why would you ever daven for anything? Don't we believe, don't we know that Hashem does what's best for us? Why would there ever be room to daven? So we're going to set that aside right now. I threw that out. I don't want to get into that whole discussion right now. But whatever the case is, the bottom line, without getting into the discussion, is that it's like the lashon of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that tefillah is a mateh oiz biyad kol adam. It's like a powerful staff that a person has with which he can do things, just like other abilities. Just like money is a powerful tool to do things. Just like physical ability is a powerful tool to do things, tefillah is another powerful tool to do things. And you can give to people and impact their lives through tefillah. The Chazon Ish makes an amazing point. It's a little bit, not exactly our subject, but it brings out the point. The Chazon Ish says something very interesting. Is there such a thing? Every person has their own bechira, right? So is there room to daven for another person to withstand the nisayon, to do tshuva, et cetera, or is that already a matter of that person's bechira? Maybe you can daven for a person to get well. You can daven for a person to have parnasa because these are things that are a matter of shamayim. When it comes to the matter of the person's bechira, is there room for davening? So the Chazon Ish says something fascinating. He says, "Well, let me ask you a different question. How did it work back in the times of Sanhedrin? If a person didn't want to do a mitzvah, what happened?" Sanhedrin dragged him in and beat him up until he realized that he doesn't want to do it. So the Chazon Ish says we do the same thing with our tefillah. You daven for a person, you hit him over the head with one tefillah, he doesn't know that you're doing it, doesn't feel it. Well, you hit him again, and all of a sudden one day he says, "Oh, I want to do this." He says, "Yes, we are meant to be involved in other people's bechiras. Their bechira will still be there, but in chinuch you're supposed to be involved with other people's bechiras. Again, you have to know how to do it with chachma." To not do it with seichel, but yes, definitely we are meant to be involved, and therefore with tefillah also, you can try to impact a person through your tefillahs. So now coming back to our point, circling back to our point, this is the idea. If you see a person is in trouble, you don't have the physical means of helping them, you don't have the material means of helping them, you have a different means of helping them. You can daven for them. That's another very chash of a means of helping them. Not much different than trying to raise money for them or than trying to get them medical help or whatever it is. You daven for them. So therefore, what happened with Zidane was exactly the same thing. These people were in trouble. Now, just like when you see a person who's sick, chas v'shalom, you're not meant to sit down and say, well, maybe he deserves it. Before I help him, I want to study his past, right? Someone comes, sick, needs your help. One minute, let me figure out. Maybe there's a midah keneged midah here, right? Maybe the person deserves it. Is that how we operate? Hashem says, leave that to me. You have rules that you work with. If someone is in need of help, help them out. If I want to get that person, I'll get them anyways, right? But if someone is in need of help, help them out. Don't figure out if maybe he deserves it, maybe he doesn't. There, this is in our case, this is actually taken a step further. Sdoim had their history with Hashem. Right now, they're in trouble. Hashem informed Avraham Avinu that they're in trouble. And therefore, as far as Avraham Avinu goes, this was the same as encountering a person in need of any other kind of help. And he davened for them. He didn't argue with Hashem. He pleaded, just like anything else, just like anything else. And his tefillahs, Hashem actually was, look at the psukim, his tefillahs were accomplishing. Stein didn't make it to the bar, but Avraham Avinu's tefillahs actually were pulling the bar down, right? That's what was happening there, which meant that there was that much more possibility for them to be saved. So that was what was happening there. Tefillah is not different than any other different form of chesed. This is not about arguing with Hashem. And I want to add a point. I want to add a very interesting point. What does it say after the destruction of Stein? What's the pasuk that immediately follows the destruction of Stein? It says that Avraham Avinu afterwards went out to the spot where he had davened to Hashem and looked out and surveyed. What's that? Vayashkef, that's right. He looked out and surveyed the destroyed landscape. What was that about? What's the significance of that pasuk? Was it like a melancholy kind of pasuk? Was it that he was resentful that his tefillos weren't answered? What's that pasuk telling us? I don't remember now who says it, but I remember this occurred to me al derech of Avigdor Miller, and then I found that one of the Mefarshim says it. That's on the contrary. Once it happened, Avraham Avinu went to look and internalize the lesson. That's what he was doing there. He was looking out to internalize. At each point, you do what you need to do. Yes, he certainly was. He wasn't going away from the track of studying what Hashem does. Right now, Hashem told me they're in trouble. Now I have to daven for them. He davened for them. After they were destroyed, he went out, studied the lesson, and internalized. This is what happens to people who destroy themselves spiritually. One wasn't the conflict with the other. One wasn't the conflict with the other.
There's probably another stupid question, but so why didn't he plead for his son when he's told that he's got to take his son and do the Akedah? Why did he just follow and not plead that it would go against everything he'd been talking about and Es was supposed to be his descendant forever? What caused him to just follow like basically blindly instead of trying to plead again?
That's a very interesting question. The question that's being asked here is, why did Avraham Avinu not plead for his son when he was told to offer his son up as an offering? A fascinating question. I never thought of the question. I can just, I'm sorry.
Rush. What?
What's that?
Rush.
He rushed through the mitzvah, yet he still had, he didn't, that's right. He didn't do it reluctantly.
No, maybe because
But
of the direct order. It wasn't like Shem telling him what's going to be. He told him to do.
so off the cuff, that would be what I would think, that there's a difference between seeing someone in trouble and being told to do something. If I'm told to do something, I'm not going to negotiate that. I'm not going to, I was told to do something, I'm meant to do it. And I'd perhaps add to it that there was a very big difference between the story of Stein and the story of Yitzchak. Were Stein to be destroyed, and they were destroyed, that was a picture of failure reaching its peak, right? That was the story of Stein. They deteriorated, deteriorated, deteriorated until they boom, right? And that, there's no question that if we're able to reverse that and work against that, that would make Hashem that much more happy. Now, had, I don't know if I should say Chalila or not, but had the Akedah actually happened, what would that be? That would be a story of two people reaching their perfection, of two people reaching the greatest place that they could reach. It wouldn't be a story of a failure. It would be a story of a life given to Hashem in the fullest sense. Therefore, it also is a very different story. But I would assume that the again, this is off the cuff, but that the core of the answer is as you said, that there was no room to negotiate something that he was told. He was told, he performed. And perhaps we also have this added point in the background. So I'll just bring a bit of a support to this. That is very interesting. Parentheses, but Moshe Rabbeinu, right? There's a long negotiation between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem when Hashem tells Moshe to go take the Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim. Right. So if you follow it back and forth and back and forth, Chazal tell us that this was actually going on for a week, right? Back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Only at the end it says, Vayicharaf Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem got angry at Moshe. Told him, Aaron will be with you. Go, go, go. What was that anger about? Hashem got impatient. He lost his patience. What does it mean that Hashem got angry? The Malbim says something fascinating. The Malbim says, if you follow the Psukim, what was actually going on, give and take, in the beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu is asking Hashem, how should it work? How is it going to work? How is it going to work? How is it going to work? And Hashem is answering him. But then Moshe Rabbeinu says, Shlach no biyad tishlach. In other words, please send with somebody else. Ooh, that's already a whole different story. You're asking Hashem, how is it supposed to work? Okay, well, you're coming and saying, I told you X, and you're coming and telling Hashem, please let me off the hook. Meaning you're directly saying, you said this, but I would rather not do it. That was where there was charoy nav. And what was the charoy nav? That Hashem acquiesced. That was the charoy nav. As Malbim says that, it's an amazing thing. He says that Hashem acquiesced. He said, okay, fine. If you don't want to do it on your own, you won't do it on your own. And chaval. It's a shame because it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same, but that's it. That's how it is now. That was the charoy nav. That Hashem said, okay, Aaron will go with you. That was the expression of that, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, but that the lesson we're supposed to learn is if Hashem wants something to happen and you change that, wants you to do something, you change that, it's not good. Right? Now Yetzias Mitzrayim was great. But yet the Malbim says that it still would have been that much of a higher madrega had it been Moshe on his own. And that was changed because of the fact that he actually directly said, Hashem said, I want you to go. And he said, please send somebody else, so to speak. He said, obviously, we're talking about things over our head, but bringing this back to Avraham Avinu, we can understand that that was the idea. Okay. Fine. So that was our side point before we start this year. So let's, and I think it was a worthwhile tangent. Let's come back and let's say let's introduce the subject. And either we'll spend time in it next week or we won't. So Yitzchak, the Sfarim tell us that Yitzchak, the dimension that Yitzchak added was the midah of Yira, the midah of Gvura, which I guess we would practically translate as the midah of Yira. This, full disclosure, is not a popular subject today. People don't like the idea. Let's just keep things nice, pleasant, comfortable, and no demands. But if we really want to achieve the greatness that Hashem has intended for us, let's have a fully rounded dynamic. Not like kind of like brush off the parts that don't naturally. It's, you know what? Let's grow into the beauty of those elements also, into the greatness of those elements also. But just to put down the point in a simple way, it's that whereas Avraham Avinu reached, he introduced Hashem to the world, and it was all about pushing, going further. For Midas HaChesed means devotion. That's what Chesed means for our purposes. That's really the more literal translation of the word Chesed. Devotion, going all the way. It was love. It was beyond the letter of law. Everything Avraham did was beyond the letter of the law because there was no law. He wasn't commanded to do anything. It was devotion. It was going more. It was love. It was dedication, etc. And you know what Yitzchak introduced? Yitzchak introduced the fact that now that we know it all, now that Avraham Avinu discovered it all, now that Hashem is so clear to us, we have to. We are bound by it. And to add to that, the submission to Hashem, the humbled submission to Hashem, and the understanding that we have no choice. And to actually fear the consequences, should we chalila step out of the path of Hashem's service. So to bring that home a little bit. Like I said before, today we put much more of an emphasis on Ava, on operating, on serving Hashem with love, and we need to. I'm not discounting that, but I am saying that, actually, this is actually how the Sfarim described it. The contrast between Chesed and Gvura is that Chesed is something that naturally just continues spreading unbounded, and Gvura has to rein it in. Okay, so when the stress on love gets such that Yira is completely squeezed out of the picture, then it becomes distorted. Then it becomes distorted. I'll approach it from an, I'll bring the point home a little bit more from an interesting angle. Should we be teaching our children about Gehenna? It's an interesting question. Should we be teaching our children about Gehenna? So I've heard many, many people say today that no, we don't want our children serving Hashem with fear. We want them serving them with love. Now, I'll agree to that in a certain way. We don't want our children's Yiddishkeit to be defined by Gehenna. That's absolutely true. I've seen that, right? And that is headed for disaster. But here's the formula that my Rebbe, Rabbi Chil Yaakovson, said. He said it like this. He said, you're certainly not busy bringing in Gehenna in the day-to-day struggles. You're certainly not busy bringing in Gehenna as the overall consciousness is that we're in this system because of closeness, because Hashem loves us. And that's actually the truth. It's much like with a parent relationship. The relationship is not about punishment. Punishment may be in the picture. Should be in the picture in its margin. But primarily, the relationship is about love. It's about closeness. So, and that's what should be dictating the day-to-day life. Love, closeness, elevation, etc. And he said, here's how you teach about Gehenna. He said, when you're exposed to wickedness, it isn't really on the table for the kid. It's not part of the kid's struggles. They don't talk about Gehenna when they're fighting with their younger sister. But, so when you're actually exposed to something wicked, to real evil, and, you know, just in order not to get into gray ground, I'll talk about, let's talk about Nasrallah, right? Nobody has a problem with me relegating him to Gehenna, that's okay, right? So if let's say you say things to your kid like, oh boy, it's a good thing that we're not busy killing Jews because you know what kind of Gehenna is waiting for him? What's the idea? The idea is now Nasrallah is very, very far out. But it could also be with things that are a little bit closer. Right? It doesn't have to be limited to Nasrallah. Things that are completely out of bounds, etc. And you say, wow, it's a good thing that we know better because people like that go to Gehenna. Now, of course, it will get delicate, fine, but let's just get across the point. The concept is that this way you're teaching it to them in a way that, Baruch Hashem, we know how to be safely away from it, but it's there. See, very far away there, there's the edge of the cliff. You do go to the edge of the cliff, there's Gehenna off it, but Baruch Hashem, we know how to keep far away from it. Now, again, how to apply it, etc., which details, fine. We're not getting into that now. But the concept is the knowledge that it's out there and the knowledge that the world is not a free-for-all, just you're great and you're elevated if you choose the right thing. But people who don't. No, there are severe consequences. And that is part of having a fully rounded, and we'll call it healthy, dynamic with Hashem, because otherwise you're really not in the right ballpark. Now, I want to take it one step further. So that's number one. It is important to appreciate that we need to have the Yiras Chet, the Yiras Ha'inish in the background. We have to know that if Hashem says something, it is not that we do it only because we love him so much and he loves us so much. Not only because of that, primarily because of that, but also with the knowledge that we don't have the liberty of choosing otherwise. And this is how the Maharal explains the famous question. The famous question is, why did Hashem, it says that at Har Sinai, we're told two different things. It says that when the Bnei Yisrael were offered the Torah, how they respond? Na'aseh v'nishma. What else do Chazal tell us? Oh, Hashem came, when he offered the Torah to the Bnei Yisrael, he held a mountain over them. He said, if you don't accept it here, you're going to be buried. Which was it? So the Maharal says something amazing, so fundamental. He says it was both. Why was it necessary to have the Kofar Aleihem Har Kegigis? He says, essentially, it wasn't. In terms of them taking the Torah, Hashem wanted them to take the Torah with love, with dedication, with that enthusiasm that they actually did. But at the same time, I'm not even sure if he says chronologically, afterwards, after they already said it, or whatever the case is, Hashem also wanted it to be clear to them. He said, if they would have gone in thinking that they could have said no, but they said yes because of the great love, that would have been a distorted, the whole thing would have been getting on track in a distorted kind of way. It had to be clear that after all that love, there really was no choice. There really were no two ways about it. It was all that love and elevation or the pits. And this is fundamental to be operating within the system of Avodas Hashem with that understanding. The consciousness is a consciousness of love, etc. But part of our glorious title is that we are Avodah. Not just Bana. We have the greatness of both titles. We have the greatness of both titles. The greatness of Banim is the love, is the closest, and the greatness of Avodim is the fact that we consider ourselves absolutely committed with the understanding that there is absolutely no other choice. And we want to excel in both titles. You want to say something?
I think I read some point that when it was a canopy. I think I read some point that it was a canopy over
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'd be interested in researching that. Very interesting.
like a
Like a
chuppah, is that
chuppah,
right?
yeah.
Right.
But
And on
the
the other comment.
what choice did they have? If he's going to throw a mountain on them, so they have to accept it over.
The comment was that apparently it says somewhere that the mountain that he held over them was actually in the form of a chuppah, a canopy. But we still can't disregard that Chazal end the statement with Im lav sham teik v'aschem. I guess it was a heavy chuppah. Might have been a beautiful chuppah, but it was also a heavy one, right? So, and I just want to end it, round this out. Let's see if we'll elaborate on this next week, but I want to round it out with another point, and that is pulling in the Chovos HaLevavos, well, outside of our tchum. We've read the Shah Kniyah, it's more toward the end. Where one theme that Shah Takniyah means the Shah of submission. It's a whole area of Avodah, of becoming. Of this of submission to Hashem, becoming a submissive Eved Hashem. And one thing that comes out from the Chovos HaLevavos and Shaar HaKniyah is that the more submission you feel to Hashem, the more kanua, the more of a nichna you are, the more real the dynamic is, the more real, and that is actually what makes Hashem cherish his relationship with you more. Because you're putting yourself, as long as you feel basically, it's weird to say this, but you will sometimes, you will actually encounter this. People feel like chummy, so to speak, right? Hashem. And we get each other, etc. There can be a lot of beauty in the relationship, but there's something very not worked out about it. There's something very undeveloped about it and very blind about it. And therefore, what the message that comes out from the Chovos HaLevavos is the more you do feel that submission, again, not that your life is guided by fear, etc., but we'll call it knowing your place in your relationship with Hashem. So, A, that makes it realer. It makes Hashem cherish it more. But I'll add even more to that. It makes the love that much more profound. Because when you really know your place with Hashem, you are that much more awed over the interest that he has in you. And that makes every aspect of Avodas Hashem so much richer, so much more profound, so much more fulfilling. If it's basically about, yeah, I don't want to use these terms, but the chummy attitude, then, okay, it's a backslapping kind of relationship. But when you really feel, when you do know your place with Hashem, and that's really what come back to Shah with this other king, then the very fact that he's interested in you, that itself is something so elevating, so rich, so fulfilling, and that actually enhances your enjoyment of the system of Avodas Hashem, your enjoyment of your relationship with him.
That the same, this holding, the world was created just you for you, and the other balance of you're just made from dust and ashes. Like it's holding those two
things simultaneously.
Yes, it's holding the two simultaneously. If you know that you are created from dust, and yet Hashem says, but you, as a piece of dust, I'm pulling you all the way close. You know, if you come into this world thinking, I am the greatest thing ever created, sure, Hashem should be interested in me. I'm interested in me. Right? So why not? Say this, it's, if you'll excuse me the term, a little bit of a cheap relationship. But if you're appreciating that Hashem says, even though we are so distant, I want you close with me, it makes it that much more significant, that much more profound. Okay, we mamish opened the subject. Now let's see. We'll see Mitz Hashem. We will go next week.
Rav Melinda to your site. So
yes, we remind them.
Special cheer.
Yes, Bli Nether. Next week, Mitz Hashem Bli Nether will be dedicated to.
So the Rav agreed to give a special cheer about Rav Melinda.